Welcome to WebCamp TV. I'm your host, Brady Gaster, and today we're talking to Scott Hunter, Principal Program Manager of the Web Platform and Tools team, and the topic today is going to be ASP.NET MVC 4. Well, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott and let him get started.
Yeah, so today I thought I'd come and talk a little bit about what we're doing new in the MVC 4 beta. Brady, just a day or so ago, recorded a great talk on one of our features in MVC 4 called Web API. Daniel Roth gave that talk. It's on Channel 9. I suggest you go find that. It's a big component of MVC 4. The main thing there is we used to have this product called WCF Web API, and customers used to always ask us, do I use MVC and have a controller that returns JSON, or do I use WCF Web API? And we thought it would be great just to solve that problem and say, we'll make them all kind of the same thing, so you don't have that question. So that's what that talk's about. I highly recommend it. It's a big component of the MVC 4 beta release. I'm going to talk about some of the other stuff that we've done in MVC 4 beta. So start off, I'm just going to create a new app. Select MVC 4. I do want to point out we have some new templates here. So we have our regular internet template, we have our internet template, and we have this new template called mobile. Mobile is for people that want to build a totally mobile application. This is a template based on jQuery Mobile. And so if you use this, we'll scaffold you a small application, all with jQuery Mobile. It'll look great on an iPhone, Windows Phone, Android Phone. Pretty cool. You'll note that the Web API I was just talking about, it's a template here as well. So you can use Web API as well. But I'm going to focus on internet applications. And I'm going to start with just showing some of the small work we've done on the template. So in the past, we've had these templates that they look okay, but if I was going to build a real application, I would want to do a couple of other techniques. One of the things now is we have devices like phones, tablets, desktops. I really want my application to look good on all those devices. And so what we thought we'd try to do is start people with a template that looks good on all these devices. So I'm going to run this. And what this does is it kind of adjusts as you actually change the size of the window. So here I've got my main page up, I've got my register and login, my home about contact. I'm going to shrink this down, and you're going to notice, let me scroll and show if I've got these images, I've got bullets with images next to them. As I start scrolling the screen, we'll get about here. Okay, you notice that all the stuff that used to be on the right side, as the right side started scrunching down, jumped into the middle of the page. And you'll note that the images next to the bullets all went away, and the rest of my images all lined up in a column.
Nice.
The idea behind this is, no matter how small I make this, it looks really, really good.
It just adapts.
It adapts as you go. And mm-hmm. so we're trying to use modern HTML to promote how I'd want somebody to write an app. Now, what's cool about this is, as I said, it's designed to look good on a phone. So I've got an emulator here. Let me just type this URL in.
So I assume what's happening is that some of the new CSS, media?
Yes, media queries.
Yeah, that's probably what's going on.
Is going on to make this look good. So we want to get people started off with a template that they can actually, that does modern stuff. So this looks great. So I think a more common scenario than starting with a mobile application is to actually take an existing application and make it mobile. So let's do that. So one of the features that we started using in MVC 3 was something called the NuGet Package Manager. It's now installed by default, and all of our templates are based on it. So I can actually go and launch the packages for this solution, and this will show you that these are all the packages that are pre-installed in my application. The cool thing about this is I can go to this updates tab here, and I can see what packages have actually changed since we shipped the product.
Cool.
This is really cool. All of our templates in MVC 4, in Dev 11, will all be built with NuGets, so you get this functionality. In our case, what we're going to do is we're going to go here, and we're going to install package, mm-hmm. and we'll use jQuery dot mobile.mvc. This is a pre-release package, so you can just add the option to include pre-release. And what this will do is it'll take my existing application and go and add things like jQuery Mobile. It'll add a new layout page for me to support mobile devices, and then I can kind of talk about, you know, how this affects you. So let's hide this, and I'll go in here, look at my views. I'll look in my shared folder, and now not only do I have a layout page, a regular layout page, but I have a layout.mobile page. This is a part of a new feature that we have in MVC, which what we call display modes. What I can basically do is for any view that I can have both a regular one or a .mobile one.
Awesome.
This is an extensible feature.
Cool.
So if I go to my global ASAX, this is where I might register one of these modes. I can come down here, and I created a snippet over here that I can just drag in, kind of showing what the code would look like if I wanted to use one of these things. And so in this case, it's complaining because I don't have the namespace, but I can... if I add the namespace for it, it wants web pages. Notice I have display mode provider.instance.modes. I can then basically say I want to add a new mode. And in this case, I named it iPhone, and I gave it a condition that we found in the user agent, the string iPhone.
Nice.
So the cool thing about this is it means while we've only put mobile in the box as a default, you can come in here and add as many of these as you want. You could have iPhone, Android, Windows Phone. You could just stick with mobile, and then you could add tablet. So it's a very extensible feature. But
awesome.
Here I've got this mobile version of my page. And if I drill in here and look at the source code a little bit, one of the things that you'll see in my mobile version of the page is I have this new partial called View Switcher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because if I go to a site like Xbox.live with my phone, mm-hmm. there's typically a view of that for my phone. But there might be an option somewhere on that page where I can click a button and get back to the main view.
Okay.
Because sometimes the mobile version doesn't have all the information you want,
right.
And you want it to pay the tax of the full site.
Or maybe you don't recognize the site and you don't know where to find what it is you're looking for.
Right. So when I'm viewing the mobile version of this, I give you this option to switch back and forth, and we'll run this and show the page in a second and show that. So my layout page has a mobile. I can also go to my main view here. I can right click and add a new view. And we'll just call my view index.mobile. That's in there. And I can say, hey, you are looking at the mobile version. Save that. I can run this application. And when I run it, nothing's going to look different here because I'm not running it from a mobile device.
Right.
But if I go back to my emulator, and I type this URL in. Now you'll see I have a different view,
mm-hmm.
and that mobile view that I said, hey, you're looking at the mobile version shows up.
Right.
So it's showing you how those overrides can happen.
Nice.
But as I said, I have that display switcher here. I can click that I want that. Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back at the full view. So
this
kind of provides the functionality you see if you go to modern apps that kind of support a mobile and a non-mobile view. So that's
nice.
We think is a big feature in MVC 4.
Absolutely. Not only that, you can target individual devices. So if you want to show one site to one particular phone and one site to another phone, you can do any kind of mobile templates that you want.
Sure. So let me just close this application down. Let me close all my windows here. And we'll create another project here. And the next feature I want to talk about is what we call migrations, NED Framework Code First Migrations. So starting with MVC 3, when you built an application, we allowed you to use NED Framework Code First to build an app. This means instead of going into database designer tools and designing stuff, I'm a coder. I just want to write some classes and get running.
Mm-hmm. Do we have to call a DBA, et cetera, et cetera?
Right. No DBAs, none of that stuff. So I'll just create a regular application here, and I'll show one of the limitations of that model. Now, the first thing I want to do is, once my project loads up, is when we ship the beta, we have to recut this because there's my there's my folder.
It's fine.
We'll do the same thing we did last time. We'll just... Let's kill the second
That's
one.
That's weird, though, because the emulator wasn't running then.
It seems to be RAM. You've seen the three things. It either doesn't load at all, it goes to the weird path, or you can't type in it.
Yeah, that's the weirdest one, I'd say. It's kind of odd.
So let's just do this. It seems to work best if you just prime the mm-hmm. console like this.
Nice.
There we go.
Cool.
So let's see this.
Go back to where we were. If it's there.
Let's verify that it's there.
Nice.
Okay, so I've just created this MVC application, and now I want to go and add some data to it. Now, first off, I want to explain that when we shipped the beta, we shipped an older version of Unity Framework. The version that supported migrations wasn't actually shipped yet. So the first thing I want to do is I want to go into my Package Manager console, and I want to do update package Unity Framework. And this will take the Unity framework that shipped as part of the beta and upgrade it to the latest version. So, bingo, I'm done. I'm now ready to go and start working on my application. So let's go to my model folder, and let's add an object. So I'm just going to come in here and add a class. We'll call it person. And let's give my person a couple of properties here. So first off, we'll give it a primary key, person ID. I'm using a snippet for this. I type prop, then tab twice, and it fills that in for me. So I'll create a first name. We'll do a string. We'll do a last name. So now I've got a database object. I'll build my project, and I'm going to go use the feature we added in MVC3, which is a scaffolding feature to go and build a page for me automatically based on that class. So let's go and add...
By scaffolding, you mean it'll do all the CRUD operations and everything? You don't have to do
it'll write all the. It'll write my controller for me. It'll write my action methods on my controller. It'll create default views for me for all the CRUD operations. Mm-hmm. And it's going to actually ask me if I want to create a data context as well, which is the thing that wires all the Unity framework stuff up. So I'll come in here, and I'll say I want to build a person controller. Notice that it says controller with read-write actions and views using Unity framework. Now I can just, from the drop-down list, I can select my object person. I'll say I want to build a new data context, and we'll call it app context or test context. I'll press OK, and I'll add it here. And as it pauses here, what it's basically doing is going and scaffolding all this stuff. You can see all the windows opening up. It's mm-hmm. created these things for me. Now, I don't have a database yet. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen is when I run this application for the first time, it's going to go create this database on the fly for me, so I don't have to worry with all that. So let's
Fantastic.
Let's run this. We'll go to the person page. There'll be a slight pause. I didn't fix the... Didn't fix the connection string thing.
That's okay.
Local DB.
We need to tell everybody about it, I guess.
So we'll just cut that off. And so here it's just created all these files for me. Now I want to show one more bug that we have in the beta. If I come over here, and if you're using Visual Studio 11, it ships with a new lightweight database called Local DB, and to make sure that Unity Framework used LocalDB by default on Visual Studio 11, mm-hmm. we actually put a special line of code in here that says, hey, we want to use LocalDB by default. We put a slight bug here where this /V11 should have been //V11, mm-hmm. because in C#, one slash...
Terminates a string.
Actually just takes the next character and turns it into a special character.
Sure.
Two slashes is actually a real slash.
Cool.
So you'd have to fix that to actually make the app run. I'm just going to use SQL Express in this demo, so I'm going to comment that out. I'm going to run my application. We'll go to person. It's going to spin up and create that database for me, so here I am. I'm good to go. Let's put some data in here. I'll just put my name in here. And this is great. This is the exact experience that you had when you were running MVC3.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing I might do is I might say, well, as I was working on my application, I decided I need to add some more data. I want to add something else to my model. So let me go back to my model, and I'll add another field here. Let's add a middle name. We'll do a get set here, recompile, and we're going to run. And what's going to happen now if I go to person? Wow, something's wrong. It noticed that the database changed, and the only option you had in the MVC3 timeframe was to basically recreate your database every time you changed the model, which I don't want to do that.
It's not too fun.
Not too fun. So let's just comment that out, and we'll use the migration feature that we have. So I'll bring the console up, and I'm going to say enable-migrations. And migrations is a feature that basically will let me add things to the database and build all the steps required to keep my database in sync. So when I typed this command, what happened was it created a migration folder in my project. I'm going to set this to true. This means when I add something to my database, it's allowed to automatically modify my database. It also created an initial create step. And you'll note here that my initial create step is basically all the steps to get my database to where we already were at. It's got a person ID, it's got a first name, it's got a last name. Mm-hmm. So now we're good to go again. Build, make sure we're run. And now let's go back to our person object, and let's add this field back in. So I'll save that. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to go back to my Power Console and say, hey, I know I added something here, so I'm going to add a migration. And I'm going to call this add middle name. And what that's going to do is it's going to go look at my data object, figure out what I changed, and then write the right commands to modify my database. So notice that it added a new class over here, add middle name. And then in that class, for up, it said to move upwards towards this, I need to take the people table and add a middle name column. If I want to go back down from this step, go to the people table and remove middle name. So now I can say, great, that's what I want. So I can say update database, and I'm going to say verbose because I want to show you guys what actually is going on under the covers. We'll type this, and you'll note that it even admits to the screen here what it did to my database. It went and altered the table, adding the middle name column.
Fantastic.
So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to my controller. I'm going to now recreate that controller. Because I want to change those views and stuff to add that new field. We'll select person. It's already got my context. I'll say add. It realizes these things already exist. And yeah, I want to override them because I know I added new context, new content to them.
Fantastic.
Now we'll run the application again. And the great thing here, my database is now in sync. I can add data to the new column, and I'm good to go. So you might ask yourself, that was great, but all those steps are happening. What if I have a remote server and I want to deploy these changes to a remote server? How might I do that?
Mm-hmm.
So what I can do is I can come back to my console, and I can ask it to update the database. But this time I'm going to do one of the options here, which is script. That's saying I want you to build me a script showing how this works. And then I can choose source migration and a target migration. That's where it starts. And I'm going to say, I want to start with initial database.
Mm-hmm.
And I could specify a target if I wanted to. And my target could be any of these things that I added, like add middle name or whatever. And that would build me a script building up to that step. In this case, I'm going to ignore the target, which means just go all the way to the end. So we're basically saying, build me a script that would build the object just as it is today.
At the current state.
At the current state,
right,
yes.
Right, okay.
So now here I've got a script file. And in my script file, you can see, first off, we create the people table. It's got the person ID, the first name, the last name that we created.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a primary key. And then down here, you can see where the second migration came in, and we went and added the middle name column.
Right.
So this is pretty cool.
Yes,
I could generate this script, mm-hmm. run it on my remote server, keep my remote server in sync so I can do local development very quickly, adding migrations as I go. If I made a mistake, I could also go back and remove these. You know, I could go delete that column back
nice.
And move the database backwards through time. So I can go forwards and backwards. So that's the Entity Framework Code First migration feature, which I think is huge.
That's huge. I mean, you could build an entire database-enabled website in one evening. That's fantastic. You didn't even open up Management Studio, didn't have to call your database to get any help, did everything right from one IDE. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good job.
Very excited about that.
Very excited.
So I'm going to open up one more project and show a few more features. The first feature I want to show is optimization. So one of the things that we even found in one of our own cases is we were looking at the ASP.NET website one day and we're going, man, it takes 3 or 4 seconds for a page to load. Why is that? Mm-hmm. So we start looking behind the scenes and we're like, oh, so we're adding like 15 script libraries, we're adding 5 or 6 CSS files. So each of those is another request to the server.
Right.
So we're noticing that our own site's not running very fast. How do you fix that?
Right.
A great way to fix that is to bundle or minify these things. So how can you take all those scripts, combine them into one script file, and ship it down the wire? So those 5 or 6 requests become one request. If you've got a couple CSS files, do the same thing.
Right.
And that's where bundling and minification come into.
Fantastic.
So I've got an app here. And in my app, let's go look at one of my views. Going to go to my index view. And I'll hide this to give more screen real estate. And I've got a couple of bundles here. So you'll note that at the beginning of this, I have an href that references the content/CSS folder.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you would not reference that folder. You would actually reference the site.css that lives inside of that folder.
Right.
So what happens with MVC4 web forms as well in .NET 4.5 or even web pages, mm-hmm. 2, they all support this functionality. If you just reference a folder by itself, we'll actually take the contents of that folder, compress, minify, and send them back as one single file. You might also notice that on here I actually specified /CSS.
Mm-hmm.
If I had different types of files in that folder, they would have all kind of come back.
Cool.
By specifying a type on the end, I'm saying I only want the CSS files from this folder.
Wonderful.
And I'll actually run this and show you an example of what this does. While I'm here, though, I want to point out another feature that we added as well. You might notice that on my href, I just type /squiggle/content.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be able to do that because
squiggle doesn't mean anything.
Squiggle doesn't mean anything in HTML.
Right.
In the past, what you would actually do is you would do URL content and pass that same string, mm-hmm. and some code on our back end would actually run to go process the squiggle slash mm-hmm. into the root of your application,
right.
and qualify that path. Well, with Razor 2, we actually now parse all the HTML, understand the HTML, and so we know that if you put a squiggle slash inside of an href,
mm-hmm.
hey, we can make that work.
You know what to do.
So let's fire this up in the application here.
Nice convention there.
And if I hover over this, you can see I am referencing that folder.
Mm-hmm.
I'll press this, and wow, I got this file back with all the space and stuff compressed out of it. Let's look at that in Visual Studio and see what that actually was in the tool. That same site, that CSS, looks like this.
Wow.
So you can see we've done some compression and minification. If I was actually showing what occurs over the wire, it's actually compressed over the wire as well, so it's gzipped as well. So
awesome.
It's showing how one, you know, make that request better.
Fantastic.
But it gets more. There's more. So the next one here, I've got a JavaScript bundle. And in this case, I'm referencing the scripts/custom folder. So let's go look at our scripts folder. I've got a custom folder in here. And inside of here, I've got a couple of files. Once again, the same kind of technique, I'm referencing the folder, this time with /js at the end.
Okay.
That means I only want the JavaScript files from that folder.
Okay.
When I run this, I'll run it in a second and show this, it's going to basically return the compressed version of that. I'm actually going to run this in Chrome. If I run it in IE, what will actually happen is IE will try to save that. It'll ask me if I want to save that to a file.
Okay.
Chrome is nice enough to actually just show me the contents of the file.
Nice.
So you can now see those three JavaScript files in one request were turned into one small compressed minified file.
Fantastic.
Showing the benefits of that.
So when you've got a 10, 15 different JS files or a 500, you know, K CSS file, it'll compress all that. Download time is faster. No more trying to figure out why it's fast on the server and slow on the client. No more problems there.
Page is fast.
Wonderful.
The next thing is, I'm showing how I can do a folder, but mm-hmm. but sometimes my I might have a folder with like 15 or 16 JavaScript files, and my page might need only two or three of them. How do I solve that? Well, we have the notion of building static bundles as well. Hmm. So in my global ASAX, I can come in here, and I've got one of these things defined already. Here it is. I create a bundle, and then I add a bunch of files to my bundle. In this case, you notice I'm adding files from the custom folder, mm-hmm. and I'm adding them from the bundle folder.
Nice.
So I'm showing that I can just go randomly pick files that I want to be part of my bundle for this page. And then I create this URL that you actually reference it. What's interesting, this URL doesn't even exist in my project. It's just a URL.
You just made it up.
Made it up.
Cool.
If I go back to the page and I request that static bundle, bingo.
There you go.
So shows that you can completely customize and build bundles however you want.
Nice.
The next thing we have is what we call a dynamic bundle. And this is how that notion of /JS or the notion of /CSS was working before. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing here is I can create my own dynamic bundles, and this is a great place for us to bring in and let you actually add your own engine for doing compression and minification. So the first time we showed some of this stuff, everybody's like, yeah, that's great, but what if I want to customize it?
Right.
One of the greatest areas of customizing this is maybe I want to support something like CoffeeScript. Maybe I want to support something like Less. Mm-hmm. CoffeeScript is a JavaScript interpreter kind of thing where you write JavaScript that in a slightly different form. Some people think it's a better form. It's a more compact. Mm-hmm. And then it's converted to plain JavaScript
right.
before it's actually run on the page.
Right.
And so if you want to do that in ASP.NET, how would you do that?
Right.
Well, this bundling feature gives you the hooks and places to wire that stuff in. So what I've done here is I've created a dynamic bundle called Coffee Bundle. I say the name of it is Coffee. Mm-hmm. So if you do /coffee on something, that means that you want a dynamic bundle.
Fantastic.
I give it a coffee minifier, and I'll show the code for that in a second, and I say that I want a wildcard of star.coffee in whatever folder it is,
okay.
If you want that. So let's go look. My coffee minifier derives from our base type of JS minifier,
okay.
And it's got a method called process, and that process basically is a method where we basically give you all the content that we see. Go find all those files, pass them in as one big stream. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do whatever you want with them, and then return them back to us. And so in this case, I just take one of the a CoffeeScript compiler, which you can find in NuGet as well.
Nice.
Feed it the content, and it returns the content back. Before I actually demo that, I want to talk about Less as well. I built another dynamic folder bundle called Less, and it uses Less. And so in this case, you'll see Less is my extension.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Less minify, and I do start at Less.
Okay.
So let's bring up the code for Less. This time we're doing CSS.
Okay.
So I derive from CSS minifier.
Perfect.
And once again, I call the Less engine to go and process these files. So let's go look what the source code for this stuff looks like. Go up here. We'll look in our coffee folder. This is what some coffee script looks like.
Mm-hmm.
See these functions. You can see I'm using some of these functions. I'll close these out. Less looks a little different. In Less, this is an example. I'm building a macro here mm-hmm. called rounded corners. It takes a radius parameter with a default value of 5. I can then in my header here, I can say I want round corners, and that means it's going to expand all this out with a default value of 5. My second one, I'm saying dot round corners and giving it 10 pixels, which means I want all these things expanded with 10 pixels in them. So let's go look at what these look like.
And those are all server-side files that get dynamically executed.
They'll be compiled. As we bundle and minify, we'll actually compile these things through the coffee compiler or through the Less compiler to actually return the results. So there you see, we went and processed that. This no longer looks like the CoffeeScript now. It's pure JavaScript. You can see var, cubes,
right.
all the variable definitions and stuff you didn't see before. If I look at the Less bundle, you can see here
that's
where my footer is using 10 pixels, 10 pixels, 10 pixels, header. So you can see how we expanded those macros. So this is showing how the bundling minification can go beyond just JavaScript and CSS. You can plug whatever you want in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I...
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite features in MVC4.
Yeah, it's fantastic for all the MVC guys out there who've wondered, well, I've got all these JS files or these CSS files in my download seems to take a long time, kind of like we noticed with ASP.NET. This will really speed your sites up. It's good stuff.
The final thing I want to show today is something called conditional attributes. This is another Razor feature. So a common thing when you're building Razor is, imagine you're building a grid of items, and you want every other row to be a different color. Today that's kind of hard to do, because what I would want to do is I want a class attribute, and I want to specify a style, but I only want that class attribute to show up on the rows that require it.
Right.
I don't want to have it show up on every single row. That's why I emit more than you have to emit.
Right. Right.
So here's how I did it in Razor 1. I've got a for loop here. It just loops 5 times. It checks to see if something's even. And if it's even, then I have to create this text block and put class equals alternate in there. That's kind of ugly. That doesn't look like HTML.
It's kind of spaghetti.
So what we did in Razor 2 is now a better idea would be, what if I just have a variable? In my case, I'll call it row class. And if it's on an even row, what I'll do is I'll assign a value of row class to alternate. If not, row class is null. Now look at my Razor here. Li class equals at row class. In Razor 1, what happened here is we'd always emit the class, mm-hmm. and sometimes it would be empty and sometimes it would be full. Well, once again, like I was talking about up here on the squiggle slashes in href, because we're parsing HTML, we know this is an attribute. And because we know it's an attribute, we can say if the value assigned to the attribute is null, don't even display the attribute.
Wow.
So these will both generate the same markup, but I think the bottom one is much cleaner.
Much cleaner.
So I can come look at the code for this.
Wow.
And here you go. Here's what you would expect. The odd ones have the class equal alternate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's showing a great feature we've had in Razor 2.
It's wonderful. Less HTML, less download.
And easier to write with all the conditional stuff up here.
Nice.
So, you know, I think these are some of the great features that we have in MVC 4. We've talked about the new templates with the designed to work on all types of devices. Mm-hmm. We've got mobile project templates now. We've got NuGet packages you can install to enable mobile features inside of an existing MVC application. We showed that if you're using Unity Framework code first, we've got this great migration feature now to let you keep modifying your database and keeping your database in sync as you go.
Nice.
And then we highlighted the bundling features, allows you to build websites that run much faster because they make less requests, the data coming across the wire is smaller, better for your users, easily customizable so you can do things like CoffeeScript and less. And we followed up and showed a few things in Razor that is better. So this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. We have more coming in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So as I mentioned at the start of this this recording, also please go check out Daniel Roth's Web API talk, because that's another key component of MVC 4 as well.
Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in all the nice new features that we've got in Visual Studio 11, Mads Christensen and Jorge just did a talk recently on a lot of those new features. Mads talks about some of the new CSS and JavaScript features. Jorge talks about a nice new feature that we've got called Page Inspector that will make your site a lot easier to debug within Visual Studio. So you've got all your new debugging features, a whole lot more JS and CSS stuff. As Scott's pointed out, we've got nice database migration features in here. It's all around better. So you should just go download it.
Yeah, final thing is, if you want information on either of these products, Visual Studio 11 mm-hmm. or MVC 4. I recommend you go for MVC 4. You can go to www.asp.net/MVC/MVC4.
Mm-hmm.
That'll bring you to the content where you can download MVC 4. There's tutorials, information up there. If you want to see Visual Studio 11, the Page Inspector stuff that you were talking about, mm-hmm. a pile of other features that we have in web forms, you can go to www.asp.net/vnext.
Vnext.
So both /vnext and /MVC/MVC4
awesome.
Will get you access to all this great content. One more URL while I'm thinking of it is www.asp.net/web-API will bring all the Web API content down
right.
as well.
And you can see that in Dan Ross' awesome Web API talk also on Channel 9.
So we look forward to you using these features.
Mm-hmm.
If you use these features and you have feedback, please go to aspnet.uservoice.com and let us know what your thoughts are.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for coming. Thanks a lot for watching Scott's talk. Thanks a lot for you to being here.
Thanks, Brady.
Thanks a lot.